inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, and happy birthday to the Constitution today. Yes, I can think of no better way to celebrate the birthday of our amazing Constitution than to do a little Constitution study. So we're going to dive right into Constitution Alive. That's the course that really made Patriot Academy's Constitution Coach program explode. We started teaching that 12 years ago now. Actually, I take that back, 14 years ago, doing live classes of just walking through the Constitution and studying the history. Hey, what do we do as citizens to live this thing out? Then we finally filmed the class at a church in East Texas and made that available to people. And then eventually David Barton convinced me to go film it at Independence Hall. And that's what you're about to listen to. It's the first week of Constitution Alive. We'll be sharing with you today, or at least as much of it as we can get in our short time together. But this is going to be a great way for you to celebrate the Constitution, to learn a little bit about the foundations. And actually, we'll spend probably more time on the Declaration today. And then Thursday, we'll get a little further into the Constitution. But let's jump in. This is Constitution Alive. Welcome to Constitution Alive. If you're watching this video, that means that someone has invited you into their home or their church or their classroom and allowed you to join them for the Constitution Alive class. And I'm so excited and I'm thankful that they did that. And I want you to thank the Constitution Coach that has joined your group together. They put in a lot of hard work to market the class, to get people there, hopefully putting coffee and cakes and whatever out to make it enjoyable for you. But most importantly, to bring together their fellow citizens to study our founding documents. So please thank your Constitution Coach for bringing this class together. And I hope you look forward to the coming weeks as you dive into the history of our nation. As you ponder the question, is America worth saving? Is the value system that these founding fathers in this very room, we're in the room where it happened, where the Constitution was framed, where the Declaration was done, is the nation that they founded worth saving? Are we in fact exceptional? Are we the exception to the rule? Is there something special about the American way of life? You're going to ponder those questions in the coming weeks, and we're going to dive into the history, and you're going to find out that, in fact, America has been the greatest national force for good that the world has ever known. And you're going to study the formula that these founding fathers put in place, and most importantly, you're going to learn what you can do as a citizen to preserve this freedom and pass it to the next generation. Enjoy Constitution Alive. Welcome to Constitution Alive, right here in Independence Hall. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, here with Mark Meckler from Convention Estates. Mark, we're in the room, man.
I'm so blown away. I gotta tell you guys, you know, I've watched Rick's classes for years, seen the kids in here, seen the family, seen you in here, and I gotta admit, I've always thought, wow, that would be so cool if I got a chance to do that someday. Thank you, brother.
Here we are. Man, this is it really is my favorite place in all of history. So much happened right here in this room. And so many people are watching these classes now and actually diving into the Constitution. But some people are hesitant. They're like, why should I take the time to study the Constitution? I vote or I do whatever, but I don't have time to study the Constitution. Why should people take time to join us in this room where we're going to walk through the entire Constitution?
You know, this is the place where it happened, right? So the Constitution's debated here, discussed here, there's arguments, it's heated, people have personal interests, you got one colony against each other, right? There's a lot of
drama.
Stuff takes, a lot of drama, right? Yeah. This is history in the making. Here's why you need to study it, because if you don't study it, if you don't know it, if you don't have it in here and in here, then you can't defend it. And it is definitely under assault in America today like never before. A lot of people think it doesn't matter. It was drafted by a bunch of old white men. It's white privilege or whatever you want to say about it. It is the most important foundational human drafted document in world history, in my opinion.
You know, we call this the cradle of liberty for a reason. I mean, this is the place where liberty started. Doesn't mean they got everything right from the very beginning. It's one reason Article 5 is so important, because we know they weren't perfect. But man, we've continually became a more perfect union. But that takes citizens knowing the document, knowing what our freedoms are. And I think one of the cool things that we do, if I could say this, is we actually make it fun, right? This is not your typical boring government class. I don't know about you, but I studied history and government in high school and college like this, asleep half the time. It was always boring. We do everything we can to actually bring it to life. And that begins with actually being in the room where it happened. There's something about doing it in here that makes you want to learn more.
Yeah, and I think for you guys, one of the things that's important to me that you know is it is here, right? So we're not talking about it from a classroom somewhere. We're trying to bring it to life. We want you to get the feeling. When Rick and I come out like this, it's not just because we want to be here because it's cool. It is cool. Yeah. I love being here, but that's not it. What I want is for you to be here
with us.
And this is why we come, is because we want to bring this to you. Sometimes people can't get to a place like this. I recommend it at least once in your life, should be on your bucket list. But even if you can't make it here, we can bring some of this to you, and you're going to sense our enthusiasm, because we love being here.
Yeah, no doubt. You're going to enjoy this, and we want you to share it with other people as well. As you're watching this, as we bring this history to life, as we walk through the Constitution with you, start thinking of other people that you want to share it with. That's our job as citizens. We need to be force multipliers. We need to be sharing this information with others. As we get more and more Americans educated, we have a much better chance of saving this Constitution and passing it intact to our kids and grandkids.
I'm going to ask you to repeat a quote for me, because I sort of tried to synopsize it, but I'm not really good at it. John Jay's quote about the Constitution, first Supreme Court, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and he was here. He helped to frame the Constitution, so he's right here in this room. And this whole quote really does summarize what we're going to do for the next few weeks as you're studying the document with your friends and family, Lord willing. Think about what he said, because he said every citizen. That means every single one of us. That's not just the leaders or the politicians or the preachers or whoever. It's every single one of us. He said every citizen ought diligently to read and study. So it's not enough just to read it. We got to study it. We need to study the Constitution, he said, because we've got to teach the rising generation to be free. And Mark, I'll be honest. For years, I always thought of that rising generation as just the young people coming up. But I think rising actually means those that are right now taking leadership as citizens. So teach the rising generation to be free means the young people, but it also means all of us. And then he said, the reason for doing all this is so that one will know our rights, will perceive when those rights are being violated, and will be the better prepared to defend and assert them. So that's what we're starting with, is what did these guys actually do in this room? Let's know these rights, and then we'll perceive when there's an infringement on those rights from local, county, state, federal government, from wherever, and we'll properly, peacefully stand up as citizens to defend and assert what was created right here in this room.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons it's so important to me, the founders told us really clearly, and they didn't mean to denigrate what they had written when they said this, but they said the Constitution's only a parchment barrier.
That's right.
It's just a piece of paper. I mean, I hate to say that. You might have seen it. Go to the National Archives. You can check that out. You can see the pen on paper. It's incredible, but only a piece of paper. It has no life of its own. It has no substance of its own. The heart, the soul, the muscles, the sinew of the Constitution, it's you. It's us.
Yeah.
And so if we don't know it, if we don't own it, like, you know yourself, you've heard the saying, like, the back of my hand, right? That's how well you know that thing. That's how well you got to know the Constitution, because if we're going to support it, if we're going to defend it, if we're going to fight for it, we really have to know it that well.
I love how you describe that, because it means, it really is taking ownership in this thing and realizing, and I love the analogy too, you're the backbone. I mean, you're really the meat on the bones of what a free society is going to be. It's not enough to have that skeleton or that parchment. We have to bring it to life every day as citizens and teach this to the rising generation.
So you're here, and that means you're doing it, right? You're learning, you're getting all this information. And the question now becomes, will you be a force multiplier? And this is one of the most important things that I do as an activist. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're an activist. That's incredibly important, but I can only reach so many people. Rick can only reach so many people, right? The way we have this force multiplier effect is you go out and you reach other people.
I love that. I love that. There's such a great groundswell happening all across the country. We want to thank you for joining us in this. I hope you enjoy the next few weeks together. We're going to take you not only into this room to study where the Constitution and the Declaration were done, we're going to take you into the largest private collection of Founding Fathers documents and pull out a lot of those original documents and talk about them in that way. But we're really challenging you every week as you study these things, start thinking about people you can share it with, become one of our Constitution coaches, and start hosting classes. This is going to happen if you make it happen. This system that they designed works if we work it. So we're challenging you to get involved. Let's all do our part in saving America's constitutional republic. Welcome to Constitution Alive, the Citizen's Guide to America's Founding Documents. We are here in one of the most amazing libraries on the planet with one of the foremost experts on the Founding Fathers and our Founding Documents, David Barton. David, thank you so much for having us here.
Hey, good to be here, Rick. Thanks for having me, bro.
So why do you dive into so much history? Why spend so much time in the past?
You know, the reason we do that is because we have been the most successful nation in the history of the world to this point, and there's a reason for that. You can't change the formula and expect to get the same results, whether it's Coke or Pepsi or anything else. And so it's important to know the formula, and that's what the history does. There's actually a great quote from a guy named George Mason. There's 55 guys who actually helped write the Constitution. 39 of them signed that document. Mason did not sign the document. He was there. He was very active, very strong part. He actually went home after the Constitution dissatisfied with some things, and he stirred up some things across America that really produced the Bill of Rights. And so that's why we call him the father of Bill of Rights. He thought the Constitution did not go far enough in protecting individual liberties.
But he influenced both. He was real involved in the Constitution and then later in getting the Bill of Rights.
He's very involved in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And significantly, he owns another notable title in that if you go back to when we signed the Declaration of Independence, we think of that's when we separated from Great Britain. Not so. Virginia actually separated from Great Britain before they signed the Declaration. And so George Mason is the guy who is a chief author of the 1776 Virginia Constitution where they separated.
Now, that Virginia Constitution, that 1776 doc, really cool document here.
Jefferson used a lot of the language that Mason had used in that 1776 Constitution, later used it in the Declaration of Independence. So Mason has a big influence. But he made a statement that is so profound, they included it in that Virginia Constitution, and they've still preserved it to this day, and it's a great statement. Here's what he said. He says, "No free government, nor the blessings of liberty, can be preserved to any people but by a frequent recurrence to fundamental principles." And the emphasis there is you keep going back to fundamental principles. Now, you're a baseball guy, and that's why you do spring training every year.
Right. You know, you're going back to those basic skills that you learned.
I was a basketball coach. We do basketball camps every year. I've had the kids for a number of years. You keep going back to the fundamentals.
This is the training camp.
This is the training camp. We're going back to those fundamental principles. And our objective with what we want to do, our objective is really well stated by John Jay. Now, John Jay became the original Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, but at the time they wrote the Constitution, he and James Madison, Alexander Hamilton did the Federalist Papers, and that was to explain to America what the Constitution is all about. So he's really one of the three guys most responsible for the adoption of the Constitution through those Federalist Papers. But as a constitutional guy himself, who helped write the best commentary on it there is, the Federalist Papers, he had a great statement on why we study this type of stuff. And this is the statement he made. He said, "Every member of the state ought diligently to read and to study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free." Now, it's interesting. He relates being free to knowing the Constitution. You ought to know the Constitution and teach the next generation if you intend to be free. He says, "By knowing their rights, they will sooner perceive when they're violated and be the better prepared to defend and assert them." Now, that's really the objective of what we're doing in all these next lessons that come along. And there's six verbs that he has in there that will be really the guideline for what every citizen needs to shoot for. So the six verbs.
So this will really drive everything we do for the rest of the course then. This is our outline.
That's the outline. He says, first, you want to read the Constitution of your country. You want to read and study it. And it's one thing to read it. It's another thing to study it.
Yeah.
So read is like a quick perusal, but study is get to know it. And then he says, and then you want to be able to teach it. You want to be able to take the next generation and say, "Hey guys, here's what you need to know. Here's the document you need to know. Here's the principles. This is what will keep you free. And this is the formula that's produced American success." Then he says, when you do that, then you'll know your rights. And when you know your rights, you'll perceive when they're being violated, and then you'll be prepared to defend and to assert them. And there's a big difference between defend and assert. Defend is on defense. I'll defend my rights. Assert them is I'm going on offense to make sure I defend your rights.
Which we need to do more of.
And that's what we need.
If that's what's going to keep us free, this part is where we're really losing out, teaching the rising generation to be free. If we don't have a good education system, if we're not teaching what's in this room, we're losing the formula.
Well, you hit the education system, let's just be real blunt. We spend up to $120,000 over the educational course of a kid to go to school for 12 years. We're not getting our money's worth.
Yeah, that's in some of our less expensive districts.
Well, that's right. That's the average nationally. Yeah. So it's going to be up or down in some. Washington, D.C. is way more than that.
Yeah.
So it depends on the district you're in. But what we know is that every state constitution says that the purpose of public education is to prepare active and informed citizens.
So we started those education systems to do exactly what John Jay is saying here. Yeah.
But what we know right now is if you look at recent elections, those who have gone through our public education system, you're looking right now at 70% that do not know the Constitution is the supreme law of the land.
Wow. So we're definitely failing on teaching the rising generation.
You're looking at 65% that cannot even tell you what the role of the judiciary is. That's one of the three branches. As a matter of fact, speaking of one of the three branches,
All right, got to interrupt Constitutional Live so we can take a quick break. By the way, if you want the entire course for Constitutional Live, we give it away for free. You just got to sign up as a host or a coach at patriotacademy.com. Patriotacademy.com, click on Constitution Coach. You can get access to this entire class, but I recommend you invite friends and family over and celebrate the Constitution with them sometime this week or maybe even next week. But make that one of your goals this month to actually go through the entire Constitutional Live course with some friends and family. Check it out today at patriotacademy.com. We'll be right back here on At the Core with Walker Wallman and Rick Green.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wallman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, celebrating Constitution Day with you today, September 17th. What a great opportunity to dive into the Constitution. So today we are sharing Constitution Alive Week 1. And this is actually out of the truncated six-week version where we had to cut out a lot of stuff. But we got down to the brass tacks, got to the important things. And today you're hearing some of that with David Barton and his museum. And then we'll head out to Independence Hall and get some of that initial Constitution training there in Independence Hall. But it's a great way to do this for Constitution Week, not only today, but on Thursday as well. So let's jump right back into Constitution Alive with David Barton and Rick Green.
52% of those who have gone through public education cannot even name the three branches of government.
More than half. So you definitely don't know what those branches are supposed to do if you don't even know what they are.
48% of elected officials cannot name the three branches of government.
That's half of our actual public servants in office.
If you don't know the three branches, you don't know checks and balances, you don't know functions, you don't know what the Constitution, and that's why you read and study the Constitution, you teach it the rising generation.
Well, maybe they devalue what is in here because they think, look, this is old stuff. I mean, I hear that all the time. It's 200 years old, doesn't apply today. Why should I pay attention to all this stuff that happened 200 years ago?
And let me just one more time hit this because this is our objective and we're going to look at old stuff. So, number one, read the Constitution. Two, study the Constitution. Three, teach the Constitution, especially the rising generation, but maybe to the burger flippers beside you, maybe the mechanics in the shop where you work.
Not only
maybe
the next generation, your generation.
Now, because we're at a point now where public education has not taught us. So we got to just teach the Constitution. But once we do that, we want to know our constitutional rights, we want to defend our constitutional rights and assert our constitutional rights. Now, that's what we're after. But you've raised the issue of, you know, it's a really old document, and we hear that. Because, you know, the founding fathers, when they did this Constitution, they didn't have internet. I mean, fastest transportation.
No airplanes.
Horses, you know. So what can we... I've been involved in a number of court cases, state and federal courts, on issues of history, original intent. And one of those issues is the issue of the Ten Commandments. Because for generations in America, you're more likely to find a copy of the Ten Commandments hanging in a civic building than any religious building.
Right.
And that's just the way it was. I mean, the Ten Commandments are considered the foundation of law. And so in so many of these places where the Ten Commandments has been hanging, there's now a lawsuit saying, oh, you can't do that. That's religious. You have to take that down. So in going through and telling the judge, no, here's the first law book in America. It goes back to the Code of 1650, and it quotes the Ten Commandments all the way through.
Yeah.
Now, you take the Ten Commandments and look at the Ten Commandments. You know, I think that thing about honoring father and mother still works. I think thou shalt not kill still works.
There's not one of those
now,
that doesn't
every
work
one of those
today.
Still works today. And the reason is they're not drawn on specifics. They're drawn on principles. They take timeless principles because the nature of man doesn't change. We still kill people. We still steal.
Yeah.
We still perjure. We still disrespect parents. That's why it works. That's the way the Constitution is. The founding fathers didn't give us all these specifics. They gave us these principles of jurisdiction, principles of overview. And that's why it still works more than two centuries later. That's why it'll still work two centuries from now if we know it and save it and preserve it.
So if they were thinking that way, though, I mean, if they were thinking, okay, we're going to put something in place here that needs to be timeless, that's going to still work 100, 200, 500 years from now, how did they get to that point? I mean, who were these guys to have that kind of foresight?
We've already talked about how poor American education is today, but we're going to pile on while we've got the chance. Because the perception in so many colleges and so many textbooks is these were a bunch of elitists. These guys, you know, they were all landowners and they were all wealthy and they were, and somehow we think of the founding fathers as the demographic of being homogenous. They're all the same kind, they're all cut from the same cloth, they're all really, and they just didn't understand common people and what common people. That's absolute nonsense. And one of the ways that that's easy for me to prove is I speak to a lot of law schools and universities, and I can put up pictures of the founding fathers. You know, here you've got the in the top right corner, these are the signers of the Constitution, 39 guys, and in the bottom left corner, you've got the 56 guys that signed the Declaration, or actually, it's got not quite the 56, because one of the things that happened with the Declaration, some of the guys, like in Pennsylvania, their state said, vote for the Declaration. They voted against it. Their state legislature jerked them out of there and replaced them with other guys.
In the middle of what was going on?
So some of the guys that are there didn't vote for the Declaration, but they got to sign it because they were replacements that would support independence. And there's some other guys there who voted for the Declaration, you get Robert Livingston. He voted for it. He's on the committee that helped write it. He never got to sign it because his state called him home to take the lead of the entire judiciary in the state. So he voted for it. He helped write it. He helped get us there. He just didn't get to sign it.
So there's a mix.
There's a mix. But those are 56 guys signed the Declaration. So let's just take the guys who signed the Declaration. Now, you're going to be doing this class in Independence Hall. In Independence Hall is where they signed the Declaration and the Constitution. And six of these guys who signed the Declaration made it over to the Constitutional Convention. You got, for example, Roger Sherman here, and you got Robert Morris, and you got James Wilson, and George Clymer, and you got six guys.
They did both.
That were both. Yeah. And more of these guys, like Elbridge Gerry here, he didn't sign the Constitution, but he's at the Constitutional Convention. He's one of the guys who didn't sign it because they didn't have a Bill of Rights. So you really have a bunch of these guys that were in this room for both documents, but not all signed. But the problem we have is when I throw this up at a major law school, really sharp kids, and I'll say, who do you recognize? Everybody can find Jefferson, everybody can find Franklin, and that's where it stops. I go, wait a minute, 56 guys, give me some more. They don't know them. Number one, we've been taught to recognize our two least religious founding fathers.
That's true.
We don't know anything about the
other. Those are the only two they really talk about.
That's the only two they talk about in schools. And we say, well, how about, let me just take you across the front row. How about Benjamin Harrison here, a great general in the Revolution? Or let's go here to Richard Henry Lee, the guy who actually made the proposal that we separate from Great Britain. He goes on to be one of the framers of the Bill of Rights. Or beside him, you've got George Clinton and Sam Adams, the father of the Revolution. Beside him, you've got Charles Carroll of Carrollton. He's from Maryland. Beside him, you've got Robert Morris of Pennsylvania. Beside that, you've got Benjamin Rush of Pennsylvania. Above that, you've got Stephen Hopkins from Rhode Island. Beside him, you got William Williams. And you come down here to Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts. Beside him is Robert Treat Paine of Massachusetts. You keep going. There's James Wilson from Pennsylvania, and there's Francis Hopkins. And these guys, we don't have a clue.
I was about to say, I assume most of those names, for folks that are watching this at home, totally new names. They're not going to recognize any.
But let me show you how these guys were really vicarious for all of us. You've got the wealthiest man in America right there, Charles Carroll. You've also got one of the poorest guys in America right there with Sam
Adams.
Right
next to him.
Sam Adams is so poor that when they elected him to Congress, he didn't even have a suit of clothes. His neighbors took up a collection for him to get a suit of clothes. He had to go borrow a horse to ride to Congress. So you got a really poor guy and a really wealthy guy. And then you've got a guy who's a surveyor, Roger Sherman. And over here, you got Thomas Jefferson, who's a farmer. And over here, you got one of the best scientists in American history, who's Ben Franklin. Then you come back over here to this guy, Stephen Hopkins, who is a governor, the only colonial governor appointed by the British that supported separation. So he's a political figure. You get back over here to Benjamin Harrison. He's a big-time farmer. And you just go through. You got John Witherspoon here, who's the president of the university. You have John Hancock, who's one of the most famous businessmen in America. So you got businessmen.
It's really a mix of
everything.
Every career.
You got rich, you got poor. As a matter of fact, 29 of these guys out of the 56 had a college degree. So nearly half of them didn't have a college degree. And
that was my next question, was education, because
education,
they didn't all have the best education.
One-fourth of these guys were home educated. Several guys, this guy right here, Roger Sherman, the only guy to sign all four founding documents, completely self-taught. He never had any formal education.
Wow. One-fourth homeschooled. So people that think homeschool, think that's not the way. Mm-hmm. One-fourth of the guys that gave us our founding documents homeschooled.
One-fourth of these guys were homeschooled. But they understood the principles, and they got those principles, and they wrote a document that didn't reflect what was going on 200 years ago. It reflected human nature.
Yeah.
This is loaded up with principles. And one thing about these guys is they were patriots.
Yeah.
They loved their country, no question about it.
What does that really mean? I mean, when you say they're patriots, that's a negative to some today. It's a big positive to others.
It's
What's
right.
it mean?
It's Benjamin Rush, I think, is the best guy to explain it, because Benjamin Rush, John Adams said he's one of the three most notable founding fathers. John Adams said there's George Washington, Ben Franklin, and Benjamin Rush. We will never stand.
And they're again a name that most people are not going to know. Benjamin Rush.
And they should, because he is the top doctor in American history. 3,000 students got their medical diploma signed by him. He's also the father of public schools under the Constitution. He also started 5 universities, 3 go today. He signed the Declaration. He ratified the Constitution. He served in 3 different presidential administrations. He's the director of the U.S. Mint. He's a huge
civil rights leader. Do that much?
One guy.
I know he's one of your favorite, too. You have a book on Benjamin Rush and his life.
We have a lot of books by Benjamin Rush. This is one of the original books that we'll talk about in a minute. But what he does is he says, let me tell you what patriotism is. And so this is what he's teaching the rising generation, because the founding fathers understood, we got the principles, but if our next generation doesn't understand this, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So that's why we put so much time in education.
You've got to instill it in each generation.
Here's his definition of patriotism. He says, patriotism is as much a virtue as is justice. Now, who would be opposed to justice?
Right.
You know, nobody. He said, that's just as much a virtue as justice, and it's just as necessary for the support of societies as natural affection is for the support of families. Imagine trying to keep your family together if you didn't have love in the family. He says, well, imagine trying to keep your country together if you don't have love for your country. Mm. You got to have love for your family. You go to the deck for each other in the family. Hey, you got to be willing to do that. And he says, actually, if you're not patriotic, you're selfish. And this is the way he explains it. He says, the amor patriae, which is the love of country, the love of your country, is both a moral and a religious duty. It comprehends not only the love of our neighbors, but of millions of our fellow creatures, not only of the present, but of future generations. In other words, if you love your country, you're saying, I want what's best for all my neighbors, and I'm going to work my tail off to have a good country because I want my neighbors to be prosperous and safe. I don't want thugs and criminals overrunning them. I want to make sure we got good government. I want to make sure they can keep the money they earn. I want to make sure they got a good education for the kids. And if I love my country, I'm going to fight for those things.
So you're not just thinking of yourself.
You're just thinking
about the other people.
If it's just me, I'll just go off the grid somewhere. I'll get out and just live my life the way I want to. I'll go right off the grid. No, if I love others, I've got to fight for my country. I've got to be willing to stand and say, and that's what he says, not just for the present, but for future generations. I want to keep these principles alive so that if the Lord tarries for 200 years from now, this country is still working, still the most prosperous, the most stable, the most free in the history of the world. But that's what patriotism is. And that's why he says it's both a social and a religious duty. We owe it to God to love other people. We're to love one another. Well, if you love them, you want the best for them, which means you want the best government you can possibly have.
Yeah.
And that's what they understood.
And you want to have laws that are also protecting that for the next generation. You don't want to spend so that you're stealing for the next generation. You want to preserve the principles that have made it possible for us to be free, which is why we're doing this. We want our generation to respect the next generation.
There's one other thing he said that I think is worth pointing out. And this will kind of set us up on what we're doing, because we got those 6 verbs from John Jay we're going to follow.
Yeah.
But also, why should Americans be involved in government? Why should we care? Why shouldn't we go off the grid? And he answered that right here in this book. This is the book that caused him to be called the father of public schools under the Constitution. Because again, he signed the Declaration, ratified the Constitution. Now we've got 13 nations that have come together as one nation. They weren't states. They were colonies. They were nations. And he says, okay, now that we're a unified nation, the United States of America, what do we got to teach in our schools to make sure that we stay unified nation? Because we've been thinking about ourselves all along. So what do we need to know now to be a nation? And so in this particular book, he has a piece called On the Mode of Education Proper in a Republic. And this is the first time anybody says, hey, now that we have the Republic of America, the United States of America, what mode of education do we have to have? And so this is what he covers and goes through. And it's interesting here, he says, the purpose of public schools primarily is a threefold objective. He says, first, public schools should teach students to love and serve God. He said, second,
public schools should teach.
As a matter of fact,
already we're off of what we're doing today. I mean, we've missed.
Well, the very next year, he wrote a piece in here. This is March the 10th, 1791. He did this. And this piece gives a dozen reasons we'll never take the Bible out of public schools in America. So, I mean, that was their mentality. And that's why we don't talk about him.
Yeah, no wonder he's not a founder that's taught. Yeah.
You know, he's one of the top 3 back then in the minds of John Adams, but not today. So what we have is, this is our number one purpose of public schools to teach young people to love and serve God. He said, number two purpose of public schools to teach young people to love and serve their country. Number three purpose to teach young people to love and serve their family.
So today, public schools are public supposed school. To be teaching love God, love your country, and love your family. That's a lot of wisdom. I don't see it being done today.
Oh, no, not. Yeah. But, you know, look at the results we're getting out of public education. We don't get our money's worth on anything today. So that's the objective. That's what it was until the 1960s when an activist Supreme Court said, we ain't doing this anymore. You know, we've evolved past that. Well, it's not working out so good for us. But nonetheless.
We stopped looking back at the history you see in this library and we said, we're smarter than those guys.
We're skipping spring training. Let's see how the baseball team does.
That's the analogy.
And that's what it is.
Yeah. Baseball team not going to do well if you didn't have spring training. Yeah. So what we've got, and every person of faith I know today, if I ask them to prioritize God, family, and country, they will say God first, family second, country third. Benjamin Rush said God first, country second, family. Now, why did he get it wrong?
Interesting.
He didn't get it wrong. He says if you ever lose control of your country, it will become the great enemy of your family. And so if you really want to protect your family, it's like patriotism, you got to get involved with your country, make sure you got good leaders, good policies, make sure they follow the Constitution, because then your family is going to be prosperous and successful. But right now, it's the government that's one of the chief enemies of the family, and it's because we don't know our documents and we haven't learned what public schools used to teach, love and serve God, love and serve your country, love and serve your family. And that was the objectives we had. And that's where Benjamin Rush has got such wisdom.
He's so right. Man, there's so much of that wisdom in this room and in these books. We got to come back to it. Now, our next part of this chapter, I have to thank you for, because we were actually sitting in a restaurant. I don't know if you remember this. We were in Nashville, Tennessee. We'd gone out there for you to speak to some legislators. And you and Cheryl and I were sitting in this restaurant. It's that one where they have live music. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I do remember that.
And I was telling you, hey, we've been teaching this Constitution class around. We're going to record it again. And you said, why don't you do it at Independence Hall where the Constitution is framed? Oh, that's a dream. There's no way that would happen. You said, no, I've done it. So you talked me into calling them. I called them. It worked out. And we're going to now be able to go to the very place where all of this happened, actual room, Independence Hall, and give folks a chance to learn and study the Constitution in the room where it happened. So let's go to Philadelphia for Constitution Alive.
Our friends, one more interruption of Constitution Alive today. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back again. Constitution Alive, the entire series, available there at patriotacademy.com. Now, when we come back from the break, we're actually going to go into Independence Hall, as you just heard me say there in David Barton's library, talking about what a cool thing it is to be there. To be honest with you, I used to really love going to Independence Hall in Philadelphia. It's just like, you know, it's special. It's the cradle of liberty. It's the actual room where the founding fathers were, and absolutely love it there. But Philadelphia, I don't know, man. It's just gone downhill a lot. So we're rebuilding Independence Hall at the Patriot Academy campus in Fredericksburg, Texas. You can be a part of that. Go to patriotacademy.com and learn how you can help us. Maybe sponsor one of the bricks. It's $2,400 to do that. So it's a great way to help. You can do $100 a month. And over the course of that 2 years, be a part of building Independence Hall at the Patriot Academy campus, where people are coming in to get trained on Constitution coaching, on how to run for office, be a legislator. Or pastors are coming in and learning about the founding of the country and how our government works so that they can preach to those things, because we're supposed to preach the whole counsel of God, not leave anything off limits. So there's a lot of great things happening at the Patriot Academy campus, and Independence Hall is just going to be one of those very, very cool features. But when we come back from the break, we'll actually go into Independence Hall to study the Constitution today by listening to Constitution Alive. So stay with us, folks. We'll be right back here on At the Core with Walker Waldman and Rick Green.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Waldman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. It is Constitution Day. We are celebrating the birthday of our amazing Constitution, and we're doing that by studying the Constitution. Constitution Alive with David Barton and Rick Green. That's what we're listening to today. We're getting segment one. Hope you're enjoying it so far. We're going to jump right back in for our final segment of the day by going right into Independence Hall.
Welcome to Constitution Alive right here in Independence Hall from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We are in the room where both the Constitution and the Declaration were adopted. This is exciting for me. I hope it's exciting for you. We're very honored to be able to be in this room. I'm actually standing in the very spot where American giants like John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and others actually had the courage to light the torch of freedom. This is the room. These walls actually witnessed the great debates of Benjamin Franklin and Madison and Mason and Hamilton and other patriots that hashed out those details to our American Constitution. So to actually be in this room where it happened is very, very exciting for me. Those documents led to and paved the way for the greatest, most free, most amazing nation in the history of the world. And this is where it all began, right here. In fact, that chair behind me that you can see, that's where George Washington sat as he presided over that constitutional convention. So just being in this room, I'm in a little bit of a sense of awe. I hope you are as well. And those at home that are joining us from their webinar, I guess I had a reminder last night of how special it is to be in this room. We came by to check out all our equipment, make sure everything was going to work well tonight. And two rangers here were nice enough to get us in and show us what we needed to do. And in visiting with them, I found it quite amazing that even after several years of working here, they still had that awe every time they came in the room. In fact, one of them, nice lady, told me she'd been working here 3 years. First 2 years, she did not allow herself to come across that rail into this room where I'm standing now. Young man that's been here a year still has not allowed himself to come into this area. Now, I didn't say they weren't allowed. They're park rangers. They could have come over here anytime. But because of a sense of awe, a sense of respect for this place and what happened in this room, they've not done so. And that was a good reminder to me of just how special this is and how blessed we are to get to be in this room tonight. I don't think I can get across to you how excited I am about this. I kind of feel like, and I use sports analogies a lot, so forgive me for that, but I feel like that kid that has finally met their hero and they're about to get the autograph of their favorite ball player ever, because being in this room is as close as I'm ever going to get to actually shaking the hands of the Founding Fathers. So this is, if I'm a little bit giddy, you'll just have to forgive me tonight. I'm more excited than I thought I would be. I knew I'd be excited, but I'm just kind of in awe of what we're about to do. So I can't help but think as I'm coming in here tonight, and I know it wasn't a true story, and I know it's a bunch of fiction in there, but I was kind of thinking about National Treasure. Remember that movie? You know, Nicolas Cage is running into Independence Hall. He finds those secret spectacles of Benjamin Franklin, and they're able to see the secret and, you know, decode the message on the back of the Declaration of Independence. And I know we're not going to find any secret spectacles of Benjamin Franklin. We're not going to see any secret messages on the back of the Declaration. But I can promise you tonight, what we will find on the front side of the Declaration and the Constitution, in those words that were made available for the whole world to see, we're going to rediscover the secret sauce of American exceptionalism. We're going to find that formula, rediscover and reestablish that formula that made America so successful. So thank you for joining me tonight and being part of it. Those men that gathered in this room on those two occasions and put those documents in place, it wasn't enough just to write those words. The words of the Declaration would just be words on paper in some attic somewhere collecting dust if it hadn't been for the men that sat in this room and were willing to stand for the things that they were saying, willing to bring the words to life by literally putting their lives on the line. And as overwhelmed as I am to be in this room tonight and in the day that we live in, I can only imagine what it would have been like to be in here, in this room, whenever they signed the Declaration of Independence, when they were willing to put their lives behind the words that they were saying. I know we always read in history, it was July 4th, of course, the only guys to sign those few days between the 1st and the 4th was actually Secretary Thompson and John Hancock, the President of Congress. The rest of the guys came back in here on August 2nd. There was three or four other guys that didn't sign until later, but most all of them came in here on August 2nd. You can imagine that's a little bit different date. I mean, that's a little bit different occasion. It's one thing to vote and say, hey, Hancock, why don't you put your name on that document, send it over to King George. It's another thing to put your name on the line knowing that King George is coming after you, after you put your name there. And they did that. They gathered here, and I love the letter that Benjamin Rush wrote to John Adams. These guys corresponded a lot after the Revolution, and Rush described in this letter what it was like to be in this room that day when they signed the Declaration of Independence. And Rush reminded Adams, he said, you know, when we came in, many believed that it would be our death warrant. He said, no one said a word as they were called forward. He said it was totally silent. And Secretary Thompson from the front of the room started on his ride over here with New Hampshire. And he said, Josiah Bartlett of New Hampshire. And Bartlett got up. He came forward. He took the pen. He dipped it in the ink. And he signed in total silence the Declaration of Independence. He went back and he sat down. And one by one they came. John Hart of New Jersey. And you can just imagine as they came forward and took the pen out of that silver inkwell and dipped it in the ink. And you could hear that pen scratching along the surface of the Declaration. Well, no one said anything. One by one they came. And finally, Elbridge Gerry got up to come forward, and the silence was broken. Now, Elbridge Gerry was not a well-known founding father. We don't talk much about him today at all. He went on to be vice president later. But only thing you need to know about him for this particular story is that Elbridge Gerry was the smallest of the founders. I mean, he was a little guy. He was not the towering, 7-foot, Thor-like figure that stands before you here speaking tonight. He was... What are you laughing at? Okay, so, all right, I'm a little guy. Okay, I'm 5'8 with my boots on, all right? This guy was even smaller than me. And he gets called forward to sign the Declaration. And then this guy, Benjamin Harrison, Colonel Benjamin Harrison, from over here from Virginia, big guy. I mean, he was the largest of the founders. He hollers out at Gerry just as Gerry's about to sign. Now, this is the most important political moment in the history of the world. I mean, this is a serious occasion. And the big guy from the back of the room says to the little man up front, he says, "I shall have a great advantage over you, Mr. Gerry, when we're hung for what we're now doing. By the size and great weight of my body, well, I'll be dead in a minute or two. But by the lightness of yours, you're going to dance in the air for an hour or more before you're finally dead." Only word spoken during the... Well, now, after the signing, they do say, some say that Franklin said, who sat here, he said, you know, we better all hang together or else we'll surely hang separately. So, I mean, they knew what they were doing when they signed the document. And I tell you those two things because I think it's important for us to know that those guys that were in here, they knew what they were doing. They knew this was going to be a death warrant. They knew that by putting their name on the dotted line, they would have to give it all. And I love the fact that when they came up and took that pen and dipped it in the ink, when they signed, it was right beneath that final sentence. It says, "In support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." Those were true patriots. They were sinners, they were fallen, they made terrible mistakes just like all of us. But they were patriots because they didn't just get excited, you know, sign the petition, go home, forget about it. These guys stood by their signature. Every single one of them. They did not back down. Not one of them failed to follow through on the commitment that they had made. In fact, when you think about the sacrifice that they made, all 56 of them giving of their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor in one way or another, some of them literally giving their lives, many of them giving their entire fortunes, some of them lost their wives, lost their sons, they sacrificed a lot for us to be free, so that generations later, we could be free. I think sometimes we forget that our freedom's not free. We forget that there have been those that came before us that paid the ultimate price for us to be able to enjoy these blessings of liberty we talk so much about. And it didn't stop in this room. When these guys lit that torch of freedom, there were others that had to come alongside, that had to rally to the cause. In fact, I love what happened a few months later. After Washington had begun to finally get his ragtag bunch together and begin to be able to do some things, and he had freed Boston, and now, a few months after the signing of the Declaration in September of 1776, he's actually in New York City. And in New York, you've got a situation where the British have attacked at Staten Island, they defeated us at Long Island, and they've pushed Washington back to Manhattan. And now Washington's kind of dug in there, he's trying to figure out what to do next. He needs to know where the British are going to move next. He needs to know where their troop fortifications are, where their movements are, where they may attack next. He doesn't know any of this, and there's only one way he's going to get that kind of information. George Washington needs a spy. But in 1776, a spy was not what we think of today. I don't know about you. When I think of a spy today, I think of a secret agent. I think of one of these cool guys, you know, like Bond or Bourne or you know. I'm thinking of these guys that dress cool. They got all the gadgets. They act cool. They talk cool. I mean, they have gadgets that will allow them to accomplish any mission impossible. I mean, it doesn't. These guys can actually, with their gadgets, they can run down the side of a mile-high building without any problem. And even when they don't have the gadgets, I mean, you got to watch out because these guys can kill you with a paperclip, a toothpick, a magazine. It doesn't matter. They're going to take care of you. And they never lose their cool. Chaos all around them, and they can still ask for a martini. Shaken, not stirred. I don't know how they do it. But I mean, all these guys, that's not what it was like in 1776. All right, that's our movies. It sounds pretty. Go back to 1776, man. If you were a spy, you were the lowest of the low. You weren't a military hero. You were a hired gun. You were not somebody that either side trusted. And Washington knew that. He knew that if he sent one of those types of folks, they're going to be killed upon capture. He wasn't even sure he'd get the right information back. What Washington wanted was he wanted one of his trusted officers to step up and volunteer for this mission. But he wasn't about to demand it of him. He wasn't going to demand such a demeaning and dangerous mission. See, if you were killed on the battlefield, there was honor in that. If you were captured as a spy and hung, no honor in that. Your legacy was destroyed. Your reputation was ruined. So Washington's trying to figure out how to do this, talking to some of his officers. One of these guys gets an idea. And he goes back to his tent. And he's got a bunch of his officers there in his tent. And in hushed tones, Colonel Tom Knowlton is telling these guys why he needs somebody to step up and take care of what the general needs. Nobody's willing. In fact, Knowlton finally gives up. He turns to leave. He's going to head back to General Washington, telling him he's failed. And as he turns to leave, this kid standing at the door had come to the meeting late. He was actually ill with a fever. So he arrived at the meeting late. And as Knowlton's about to leave, this kid steps forward and he says, "I will undertake the mission." Now, to really understand what's happening in this tent, you got to understand this was not your ordinary group of officers. This was not your ordinary soldier at the door. In fact, these men were Colonel Tom Knowlton's Rangers. These were the original Special Forces. This was the first group of Army Rangers. They had recently been put together by Washington. These were the guys that were the Special Forces. Now, the only way for me to wrap my head around that and you know, living in the day that I live in and trying to think about the Revolutionary Era guys, Special Forces, I got to think like this, okay? Maybe you can join me in this. Just think Chuck Norris, but with a ponytail, okay? That's the only way I can get my head around that, okay? So you got these Special Forces guys, all these guys with their ponytails. They've gathered in the tent, and Knowlton is trying to find a volunteer. Well, the guy at the door is none other than Captain Nathan Hale. He's only 21 years old. 21 years old. Now, this is a guy that had graduated from Yale at 18. He had studied for the ministry, went to become a teacher for a few years, and he's teaching in New London, Connecticut. And while he's teaching there, the war breaks out. Lexington and Concord happens. Now, he's just halfway through his 19th year when Lexington and Concord breaks out. So he's still a teenager, basically. But when he hears about Lexington and Concord, he shows up at the town hall meeting there in his hometown to discuss what's happening. And this 19-year-old stands up in front of his community, and he says to them, he said, "We should take up arms, we should march immediately, and not lay down those arms until we've achieved independence." Independence? I mean, nobody had uttered the word independent in his hometown yet. But this young man shakes his community from that colonial submission, shakes the hands of his students, and he marches off to war. And now here we are, a year and a half later. He finds himself outside this tent of Colonel Knowlton's, and a buddy of his is actually there. He's also an officer, a guy named William Hull. Captain William Hull had gone to school with him at Yale. And so Hull is trying to talk Captain Hale out of this. He's saying, "You're never going to succeed at this. There's no way you'll accomplish the mission." He said, first of all, he said, "Hale, you're too honest. There's no way you're going to be a good spy. You can't lie. You're going to fail in the mission. Secondly, this is an impossible mission. You're talking, there's no way you're going to achieve." And even, he said, "Even if you succeed, your reputation's going to be ruined. Your legacy is ruined. Don't do it. There's no honor in it," he said. Well, Captain Hale said, "There is honor in any mission necessary for the cause of freedom. I will do my duty." Takes off, dresses once again as a teacher, gets across enemy lines, and acts like he's a teacher looking for work. So he goes around New York there, and for about a week, he's mapping out the locations of the British troops. And he gets all of their fortifications, their movements, he gets it all down on paper, stuffs it in his shoe, then he's sneaking back across enemy lines, and he's captured. Well, evidence is right there on his person. There's no denying what he's there for. So literally that night, they sentence him to hang the next morning. And so that night, he's contemplating his fate. He's saying, "Look, I failed. I failed the mission. I failed the general. I failed the cause for which I love so much. What can I possibly do?" Well, he asked for a member of the clergy he's denied. He asked for a Bible he's denied. He finally gets a couple of pieces of paper, and he's able to write a couple of letters. And as he's writing these letters, he purposes within his heart to do the only thing left that he can do to help the cause. And so the next morning, they're marching him out, and the crowd has begun to gather to witness the hanging. And they give him a chance to say a few last words. And a lot of different people wrote different things about what he said. Apparently, he gave a pretty long speech. I mean, this 21-year-old actually gave an impassioned speech about freedom, about what the American cause of liberty was all about. And he's reaching back into kind of the days of college where he was actually a great orator. And he's reaching back into the rhetoric and some of the things that he had read then, including right here, Joseph Addison's Cato had been a big influence on...
Well, friends, we're out of time celebrating Constitution Day, September 17th. 39 men put their names on that document that we still celebrate today. We're losing it. We are losing the Constitution. But we're fighting to gain it back, and more people are waking up. And if you will be the catalyst for a restoration of constitutional principles and biblical values in your community, we can save this thing. So make sure you sign up as a Constitution coach today at patriotacademy.com. Get Constitution Alive, Biblical Citizenship in Modern America, Constitutional Defense, all of our Constitution courses for free when you sign up as a host or coach today right there at our website, patriotacademy.com. And then invite some friends and family over, watch these classes, and help us restore the Constitution. Thanks for listening today to At the Core with Waka Wildman and Rick Green.
Preborn celebrates that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. Roe has been responsible for the slaughter of over 63 million babies. Now the decision to abort a child will be left in the hands of the states, and sadly, abortions will continue in the most liberal states. Over the past 16 years, Preborn has positioned their clinics in the top abortion cities where 50% of abortions occur. Preborn's work of saving babies' lives continues at an even greater level as they save babies' lives and defend their centers from the radical hate groups who want to shut them down. Preborn's response is dependent on you, the pro-life community. Be a part of rescuing lives and changing hearts for Christ. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 will help to rescue five babies' lives. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.